We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Talking Buffalo, featuring conversations with guests from around the world of sports, media, pop culture, and all things Buffalo, with your host, Patrick Moran.
All right, another episode of Talking Buffalo, your weekday daily driver for Buffalo Sports Talk and more. My name is Patrick Moran. Thank you for locking in, watching the video, listening to the podcast. Regardless, I appreciate y'all very much. Today is going to be our Tuesday episode, which means, as usual, I'm bringing in my man, Anthony Marino. A pretty long week, man. What's going on? Let me start with this, Anth. How much of this draft did you actually watch? And also, I remember talking to you before the draft started, and you were hoping the Bills traded up. Not so much for a specific player because you thought it might make your team better, but because you wanted to be able to go to bed earlier. You ended up staying up late Thursday, man. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, it was. This was a different draft weekend for me. Usually it's like I try to clear my schedule as best I can so I can watch the entire thing. And just between Thursday night, I was in the car for most of the draft, so I ended up listening to Nate Geary and the guys on WGR for their coverage, which got me through for a long car ride, which shout out to them for keeping me entertained during that stretch. Friday, I was able to watch a bit, and Saturday, I missed everything, which usually Saturday is a day I love of it because it's, you know, they're drafting players you've never heard of before. But it becomes that quick scramble to like, hey, let me go to Dane Brugler's, you know, copy of The Beast and read up on this guy, or, you know, see what Daniel Jeremiah was saying, or Lance Zierlein pre-draft. And all of a sudden you find yourself getting excited about somebody that you've never heard of before. It's always kind of fun, but this was probably the year I've watched less of the draft than I have before. So might make some of these takes as we're recording today a little bit interesting.
You know, it's funny. I'm getting old, dude, and my memory comes and goes. And now I remember last week we were talking at the end of the podcast, and you said you were going to be in the car. And that the last time I think you said you were in the car for a draft was the Dante Whitner draft.
Yeah, I was expecting the Bills to take Matt Leinart to be their
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because you listened to it on the radio driving. How was our friend Nate Geary? What was his like demeanor as the Bills, you know, as receivers were going off the board and as the Bills didn't trade up and ultimately traded down twice? Because Nate's kind of a lot like I am, like an in-the-moment reactor, sometimes a knee-jerk, a big overreactor like myself. Like, what was his demeanor like live on the air?
It was interesting, and I got to admit, I got home right before the Bills were going to be selected.
Oh, okay.
Right? So instead of switching to the broadcast, I kept listening to Nate and the guys because I felt like that was better. But then, of course, I'm looking at Twitter, so I already know that the Bills are making the trade for the Chiefs before they react, and it was they were shocked, right? I mean, it was kind of like, it's the Chiefs, right? Like, you're thinking to yourself, are you trading back to, you know, Carolina or into the second round or this and that? And then when it's just like, it's Kansas City, there's a bit of that like stunned silence that came across. And that was different, right? That was
a little anxiety for you seeing him go back twice like that, not taking, because I mean, look, we talked, you were on the wide receiver train. And by the way, for people who are watching or listening, Anthony and I are going to spend some time. I almost said Nate, because we're talking about Nate Gary. We're going to spend some time going through a handful of what we think were our favorite drafts from teams around the league, and then kind of have a little bit of a discussion just about where this Bills roster is, how it stands right now, and of course, our thoughts on the Bills draft. But you were coming into this draft very much on the wide receiver train, and then you get to, you know, it became obvious the Bears. Now, you were on the road listening. I'm watching on television, and my wife is with me, and my wife was very much, let's go up and get Rome Odunze. So the Bears get on the clock at 9, and I get some anxiousness to me. And by the way, you talked about being on Twitter. I actually stayed off Twitter night 1 and 2 of the draft because I did not want anything spoiled. And of course, picks were coming in before they were announced. More on that in a second, too, by the way. So I did not know what was going on until it was either pick is in or whoever the pick announced was. So when it wasn't Rome Odunze, I got a little bit upset. And then I realized at that point that dream's dead. Then I started focusing on Brian Thomas Jr. and trading up, starting as early as maybe 15. And then Jacksonville traded down from 17, ended up getting them anyway. But again, you being on the wide receiver train, so the Bills get at pick 28. I can't really remember how you felt about Xavier Worthy coming in. I know we both like Xavier Leggett. They're both on the board. Where did you have some anxiety when they did not make that pick? Not once, but twice.
It was, I had anxiety. I will say that, right? And definitely to your point, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. was my most realistic big swing opportunity. As much as I could have liked Rome Odunze, I didn't think they were going to go up to 8 or 9 or something like that. That seemed like too much. But Brian Thomas Jr. did seem to me like, hey, if this is their guy, they can do that. And, you know, I don't know what it would have been to get up to 22. They probably would have needed to do like a future second round pick. And obviously that didn't happen. Him going to Jacksonville was disappointing, especially as they had traded down. You know, that was a moment as I was driving where I was just like, shoot, man, that's not what I was hoping to hear here. Because once he got into the 20s, part of me's thinking like, okay, this could really happen. And then when they did get to 20, you know, they're getting to 28, you hear that they're making the trade and it's just like, okay, I was hoping that they were going to take Xavier Leggett. And it was like, you know, you just got to stay in front of Carolina, then maybe that's fine. Yeah, and yeah, there was that part of just like the Chiefs are taking Xavier Worthy for a second that you're like, shit, man, like that didn't feel good. But I am also at the point of just like, I don't care what the Chiefs do anymore. Right. And I know there's so many fans that will just be like, you know, oh, you got to get past the Chiefs. You got to get past the Chiefs. Here's the thing. The Bills have beaten the Chiefs the last 3 years in a row in the regular season. I get it. It's not the playoffs. That's the hump that you need to get over. But it doesn't feel like this insurmountable piece. Like as heartbreaking as 13 seconds were, heartbreaking as last year, you know, Tyler Bass missing the field goal that would have tied it with a minute and change left in the playoffs. Like, it's not that this piece that I look at and just say, oh my gosh, you know, we're getting spanked by the Chiefs each and every year. And there's no chance that this can happen. So the anxiety was there. Like, it was really just a little bit. And then even as I heard people calling in and, you know, you're seeing stuff online and people getting really upset about the Bills trading back with the Chiefs, it was like, I was in the opposite direction. It was like, I'm not there. I can understand why people are upset and that's totally fine. But that just wasn't me. I mean, as fast as he is, like, and he might end up being great, he might end up not being great. But the 40-yard dash to me is still, it's a bit overrated when you think about things. And I'm not just saying that because Keon Coleman ran a 4.61. Like, trust me, I would much rather seen him being like the 4.4s or something along those lines. But you know, as far as that goes, like we've seen in history that does not equate to success in the NFL.
I'll tell you what,
it doesn't equate, but you know what I mean? Like there's enough guys that have fantastic 40 times that aren't, you know, Pro Bowlers.
First of all, that's a fantastic point about the Chiefs. I was the complete opposite because again, I am kind of a in the moment overreactor and then perspective will kick in. And then I'm like, All right, I get it. Like when Brandon Bean said, well, if we kept the pick and we didn't take Xavier Worthy, Kansas City could have moved up and got him at 29. They probably would have. So I get that. And you bring up another really good point. When we talk about the Chiefs, it is true. They can't get over the hump right now by beating the Chiefs when it matters. But here's the thing. Not only have they beaten them three straight years in the regular season, but of course, the last few times they've met in the playoffs, you had 13 seconds. That game was over and the coaches blew it. Simple as that. And then this past year, the Bills were winning most of that game. The Bills absolutely should have beat the Kansas City Chiefs last year. So it's not like this big, well, they are a juggernaut, but it's not like this juggernaut that the Bills are just simply, you know, they don't have the talent or the ability to get past. So you might as well just make trades with them. Well, another time too, because when you talked about Worthy and the speed, I looked yesterday over the weekend at the fastest 40 combine times in history, and the list of receivers is not impressive. Yeah. Really not. There's guys like, I remember John Ross is on there, Henry Ruggs, Marquise Goodwin, all these like fastest lightning guys, the fastest guys ever. Not really any of them have done much in the NFL. But I will say, if we're going to be fair, because if you're a Chiefs fan who happens to be stumbling upon this, you know, we're saying, well, just because Worthy's fast doesn't mean he's going to be good. Well, just because Mike Evans and Keon Coleman had similar traits coming out of college doesn't mean that Keon Coleman is going to develop into the next Mike Evans in the NFL. He could be just as easily be Kelvin Benjamin for all we know. It's kind of like a wait and see. Which you brought up something. We were talking quickly on air. Before we get into our team drafts, we got time, man. Let's maneuver our way into this. You were talking about listening to WGR on Monday morning, which, by the way, I usually preface this. Anthony and I are taping this on Monday morning for Tuesday's drops. So something crazy happens on Monday. We didn't talk about it. Now you know why. But anyway, you said you were listening to Sal Capaccio and fans were really going in on Keon Coleman, who we'll talk about in a few minutes. But you were getting annoyed by the negativity, like in the mentions and stuff like that.
Well, and it, you know, and it's one of those things like, and I should say, listen, you lead up to this draft. Some folks are going to be really negative afterwards. Some people are going to be really positive. The folks that, you know, 3 days later that are really negative, it's like,
because you got your own list.
I got to question a little bit like, what, hey, come on. Like, what are you doing here? So Sal had said on WGR, on the morning show, he has a friend in sports media that's also a Florida State fan. So he said, I reached out to him after the, you know, the Bills picked Keon Coleman to, you know, hey, what do you think? And Sal prefaced it like multiple times. He goes, he's in the media, but he's a Florida State fan. Let me be clear with that. And he said, I compare him to Mike Evans. And it was like, oh, geez, Mike Evans. Now, listen, over these past couple of days, I've heard comparisons to Anquan Boldin. I've heard comparisons to Brandon Marshall. Like you've heard some really good comparisons from the people that are positive towards this, but this was the first time I had heard Mike Evans. And you know, Joe and Jeremy kind of, you know, went back and forth a little bit. They said, well, the separation thing, this and that, this is who Mike Evans is. But I did feel like and again on the show they were talking a little bit about who Evans was today or as an NFL player, not the prospect he was coming out of college. And that was a year that was the year the Bills drafted Sammy Watkins. So, you know, I remember you know, thinking Mike Evans might be the guy that they were going to draft if they stayed where they were, or Odell Beckham, or, you know, if Watkins fell. And it was, you know, I kind of remembered the narrative on Evans being like Johnny Manziel just throws the ball up and he just kind of goes and gets it. It's like these YOLO balls, like he's not a great route runner, any of this. So I pulled up on NFL.com this morning, just his draft profile, right? I think Lance Zierlein and those guys, they do a great job of like strengths, weaknesses. And as you read through it, it's almost like if you said this was Keon Coleman's draft profile, you probably would have believed it, right? Here's a guy was a two sport star, you know, could have played college basketball player, doesn't have great speed, long strider, you know, has to be physical to go and get balls, all these different pieces where you're just, you know, you're reading it and you're just thinking to yourself, yeah, there's no part of what you just read about Mike Evans coming out of Texas A&M that you would have been like, oh, this guy is going to be a future Hall of Famer. Sure. Of course, I mean, you can do that with a ton of different players. That's not the point is it just was it was an interesting comparison. And when you go back to it and read like the college basketball, college football correlations that tied to it, the things about the speed, the lack of like overall athleticism, some of those things, it was just interesting. And I don't, you know, I'm guessing that guy that was chatting with Sal didn't go back and read the NFL.com draft profile beforehand. So it was just, here's the thing, right? You talk about people getting in your mentions. If you want to find a positive comparison for Keon Coleman today after the Bills draft him, you can do that. If you want to find a negative comparison and you want to look for that information, you can find that too. And you could have done the same thing if they took Xavier Worthy or Xavier Leggett or A.D. Mitchell or anyone outside of the top three. There's going to be some real positive stuff you can find and some real negative stuff you can find. And right now it's your choice which one you want to gravitate towards.
Agreed, 100%. Look, when it comes to, well, first of all, going to the draft. So I was upset when they didn't take, I actually wasn't even Xavier Worthy I really wanted, though. I wanted Xavier Leggett at 28, and they trade down, and he's still there at 32. And I'm not going to lie, in the moment, I was definitely upset because I wanted Xavier Leggett. And then, of course, to spend, I get it. The Bills are not thinking about a couple hours of their fans. They're thinking about the best interest of the football team. But you know, when you watch a draft and you're thinking about it and you're doing these mocks and episode after episode of what they may or may not do, and then you lock in and, man, it was like Christmas morning, night one of the draft. Just, man, the day took forever to get there. You lock in. I play my whole evening around, and I know I'm going live after the show, and then the Bills don't make a pick. You just sit there a little bit stunned in the moment. But again, it's about years down the road for the team, not necessarily pissing off fans for a couple hours. I get it. I'm not going to lie to you. I was not high on Keon Coleman. I'm still not high on Keon Coleman as we speak. But that said, I understand too why, you know, like why fans, I should say, are embracing him, because you should. Just because, like, Josh Allen was not the guy that most fans wanted in 2018. It was Josh Rosen, you know? So are you going to not root for Josh Allen because you wanted to be right? Well, I told you Josh Rosen was going to be the guy. I really hope people aren't like that, and I don't think most people are. But he was not a guy that I thought was a top 8 to 10 receiver. The Bills obviously thought different. One other thing, too. I got to tip my cap to Ashley Petty. I don't know. I think you know who Ashley Petty is. Well, she's a Bills fan. She's no Bills insider. She doesn't have a podcast. She doesn't write for a blog or any of that. She's been involved with some content stuff before. And I don't know how, and I really don't care how, but I will tell you, she was tipping picks on Saturday. Thursday and Friday, I refused to look at Twitter. Somebody, I think it might have been Joe from Queens, was telling me, Ashley, you know Ashley Petty? I'm like, yeah, I know her really well. She's tipping picks. I'm like, what? So I kind of looked into it a little bit, and I'm like, yeah, she's probably just looking at the PFF tracker or something like that and typing out the picks before they come out. No, she was beating the PFF tracker to these day three picks. I don't even know if you know this.
She was tipping on Thursday night.
Yeah.
She had the trades first.
She clearly knows somebody, has a source, whatever it was. But anyway, I want to tip my cap to her because I hate that shit. Like, again, I stayed off Twitter because I want to be surprised. But if you wanted to know, she was bringing it before literally all these other insiders were. So a quick tip of the cap to her. But anyway, before we get into other teams, take a couple of minutes and kind of, I want to get your thoughts on this Bills draft, like what you think about it, not just the Keon Coleman pick. And we don't have to go every single pick by pick, but just like necessarily team pitcher, some of these players, like what did you like about this draft the most from a Bills perspective? Maybe what did you not like about this draft from a Bills perspective, stuff like that. Let's start there.
Okay. So at first I was very middle of the road, just shrug your shoulders about the draft class. And then as I took a step back and it was just like, okay, well, why do I feel that way? And it's probably because they didn't add a second wide receiver.
Sure.
Right. But, you know, so it's like, okay, if in the fourth round, if they traded up and took Troy Franklin or Javon Baker, myself, lots of Bills fans are probably like, you know, starting the GoFundMe for the Brandon Bean statue to put in downtown Buffalo, right? Like, oh my gosh, like they would have been so excited of, you know, you got Keon Coleman and Troy Franklin, or Keon Coleman and Javon Baker. And it was just like, okay, if my happiness around this draft hinges on what I thought the Bills would maybe do with a fourth round pick, then I should just stop right there, right? Because that's just being silly, right? It's really being silly when you look at things. I did think it was interesting, and I know you don't want to go too far on Keon Coleman, so much of the narrative changed on him once he met with the press. And all of a sudden, this guy became a darling of the media, of social media, of fans, of just being a very genuine person. I mean, gosh, he sits down, right, and it's like there to the right, and I totally can relate with this, the table of all the snacks, and he sees the cookies, and he's like, oh, we've got all the snacks over here. Yeah. Then he goes through the interview, and the first thing once he starts to say, you know, it's like, can I have some of these? And it's like just a very natural, charming way to him, even talking about the jacket that he had, talking about wanting to play with Josh Allen. You're just like, okay, there's something very likable about this guy. And then when you went through the entire draft class, and we've talked, like, you've lost a lot of leadership, a lot of character on this team. And I know there's some that will be like, oh, you know, I know Joe was on with you yesterday, you know, talking about culture and iron sharpens iron and all that type of stuff. But you know what? But listen, there are some people, and I get it, like, hey, just get good players, and I'm there. But when you have that void, there did seem to be this piece of just like, you got to added a lot of guys that were in leadership roles and that were high performers, right? Not just like, oh, they were nothing, but guys that played a leadership role where they were before coming to this team. And when you talk about a Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde and Trey White and Mitch Morris, like, that is a void. That is very real. And you can look at these things and just say, like, okay, hey, that's no big deal. But if a Cole Bishop is a really good player and a really good leader, great. If Dwayne Carter is someone that's going to come in and it's like, hey, he's going to play 40% of the snaps at defensive tackle, something that we've looked at and said there's been a void. And here's a guy that, like, oh my gosh, like, what a person, right? I mean, just for he reminds me of a way of like a Harrison Phillips as a person, of a Kyle Williams as a person. And again, no surprise playing defensive tackle, but just having those leadership characteristics. Again, I'm talking as a person, not as a player on the field. Ray Davis and his story, it's like, good gosh, man. I can get emotional just thinking about what that young man has been through in his life. And just think to yourself, like, man, I want you to be successful. So I am getting emotional thinking about it, right? Like, that's just it's a very real thing. And you just kind of go down the list. It's like, okay, there's a lot of high character players there and some guys that have defied some odds. All right. Like, let's see what these guys can do. I think they're definitely going to have an opportunity. I mean, you can look at this and say, hey, for the most part of these 10 guys, I see 8 that have a really good path to making the 53-man roster.
Yeah.
And that's, I think for most of us, we thought like, wow, gosh, I don't know. Like, maybe they'll only end up drafting, you know, 7 players. You make some trades, you move around. So sorry, I got long winded there.
No. Look, Keon Coleman is interesting to me. And I think maybe some of the reason why Bills fans and media and content creators maybe didn't think much about him, in fairness to everybody, is because of the description of how Brandon Bean kind of made it sound like the type of player that they were looking for. Speed, explosion. Yeah. Him and McDermott were both talking about it. Keon Coleman does some things well. Really, explosion is not really one of them. His speed, I mean, he does play faster than what his 40 time is. I just think it was surprising. And again, I don't want to, a guy who was not ranked high on my list, and it ain't just me. Like, Jeremy White on Thursday night, I don't know where they had their draft party, but he had a big, like, kind of a station with like a bunch of trains and names on it, 10 of them, or like 15 names. I'm petty and I'm bored. So I looked. Keon Coleman was like 10th on his list. You know what I'm saying? But I get it. And also, by the way, I also have a couple really good friends who are big Florida State fans, and they kind of feel the opposite about what sales guy who works in the media is about him coming to Buffalo. His numbers weren't great at Florida State. You know, he averaged like 4 catches for 50-some yards last year. But I also, as time has gone on, I get it. I get why they did this. I think it's a sensible pick. One of those guys who it feels like his best football is yet to come. And who are we to sit here and talk about if a guy's going to be a good pro a day after? I just go back to last. I learned my lesson last year, maybe, with Terrell Bernard. I mean, how wrong could I have possibly been about a human being than I was about Terrell Bernard? Terrell Bernard is undersized. He's going to get swallowed up all the time in the NFL. Look at him. You know, so for me to say Keon Coleman can't get open, he can't separate, he's not going to be an impact player, who the hell am I to know? And to your point, I was the same way. In fact, maybe even worse, I was a wide receiver double dip guy. And I think maybe that skewed initially my opinion of the draft as it was happening, because these guys who were going off the board weren't receivers. So my first instinct's like, oh, come on, man. Where's that second guy? Where is Javon Baker? Where's, I think it might have been the fifth round. Jamari Thrash was out there and the Bills didn't take him. And then they traded down when they could have had him again. That's probably where I lost my shit at the point of this draft more than anything. But when I removed my emotion of wide receiver double dip, I really like this draft. I like Cole Bishop a lot. Talk about him a lot during this process. He's going to be an impactful player. I've told you that I think the defensive tackle depth position was the biggest weakness on this team last year, that it stunk. So you get here and you get a third-round guy who's a good player, might become a leader on this team. Got a couple interesting projects. Ray Davis, forget about the great story, and it is a great story. The kid's a good running back, you know, and he's going to have a role on this football team. So as time has went on since the draft, and I've removed that, come on, how do you not take a second receiver? Once I get that out of my head, I've really come to like this draft. I think it was a good value draft. And the value matched the players. Like on like Daniel Jeremiah and Dane Brugler and these guys, the value seemed to be really good with them. So, yeah, I don't know what there's really not to be happy about.
No, and it's again, the choice is yours, right? Like if you want to look at this and want to look for the positive in all of these picks, it is 100% there. And if you want to look for the negative, that's a choice that somebody's, you know, gonna have to make. But I did think one other thought, and it is interesting because, you know, you talk about this team and it's like, I don't think the Super Bowl window is closed. I do not think they have punted on this year. That's not it at all. But a little bit of a shift, right? When you talk about what I'll call like a bit of a reset to the roster while still being competitive. But even when they changed or traded the 1 5th round pick to get an additional pick, a fourth rounder in 2025, you know, you think, okay, you've got that. You're probably going to get another fourth round comp pick from Gabe Davis, a fifth round comp pick from Leonard Floyd, the second round pick from Stephon Diggs, a lot of cap space next year to work with. Like, you know, listen, trust me, I'm a little bit exhausted from this 2024 offseason so far between free agency and the draft. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but the Bills are putting themselves in a position where they can be pretty aggressive. And I know I say, like, I'm not too focused on the Chiefs, but Chiefs have a lot of contracts that are coming up next year, a lot of big contracts that are coming up next year, and they're going to be the team that is up against the cap. So it's you know, you gotta play both sides of this, right? You've got to play for the immediate future and, you know, looking up to 2025. And I thought that was really interesting when they traded a fifth round pick to get a future fourth.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to take a break in a second, talk about a couple of our favorite drafts. And like I said, I got some general Bills thoughts as well. Do want to say, so Monday, as we're taping this Monday, by the time people are watching or listening to this, the comp pick formula is done at that point. So the Bills or any team could sign guys now where it won't count against the comp pick formula. For people out there wondering if the Bills are going to sign anyone a wide receiver, I really don't think they're going to sign someone significant. But if they were going to, if they're going to extend somebody or find some room or maybe something beyond just a vet minimum, I'm looking at the list right now of guys. Realistically, you could be in the mix. Michael Thomas is still out there. There's plenty of names. Michael Thomas, Michael Gallup, DJ Chark, Odell Beckham Jr., although I do not find him realistic, doesn't fit, I think, what they're looking to do. MVS, say what you want about him. He had a couple big plays in the playoffs last year, but MVS is out there. Russell Gage is out there. Sterling Shepard, Allen Robinson Jr. So there's some... again, not great players, but there's certainly some guys out there if the Bills do look to add via free agency at some point. You know, I love your point too about this offseason. Exhausting. You said exhausting. What a great way to describe this 2024 offseason. But anyway, I'm taking a real quick break, come back on the other side and get some of Anthony's favorite drafts from around the league.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, I'm back here with Anthony Marino. All right, so we talked Bills draft. I think we're both pretty much on board and certainly willing to let things kind of play out, a level-headed approach, something new to me, something that you usually have. Anyway, around the league, couple of teams where you really thought, man, they did real good. What do you got, man?
Well, I mean, honestly, one for me, and it's, this is an easy like chalk pick, but the Chicago Bears. And I think there was a lot of talk, especially from Bills fans. Well, hey, are they going to trade out of nine? They don't have enough draft picks. They need to trade back. Is that something that they're going to do? Like, and no, they didn't. And honestly, like, and I said it's leading up to the draft, like, God, they would be stupid to do that. Like, take Roma Dunze. Like, the guy, if he's as good as we're talking about him being, like, why wouldn't you do that? And for right. them to go and just look like, listen, we got the rookie quarterback, we've got the rookie wide receiver. Like, and some people were like, well, you've got Keenan Allen and you've got, you know, DJ Moore and all that. And like, that's fine. Like, Keenan Allen's got a little bit of time left, right? Like, but you know that he's closer to the finish line than he is to the midpoint of his career. You know, Moore has done some great things, but it's just like, let these two build together. And it was just like, you know, I realize it's easy again to cherry pick, like, hey, the number one pick and the number nine overall pick. But the narrative on the Chicago Bears after a weekend has changed so sure. much of being a laughingstock of the NFL. It just really, really stands out. And to me, that was an easy first one to highlight for myself.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I hope they remain a laughing stock because the Bills are going to have their fourth round pick next year. Which, by the way, in addition to what the Bears did, they traded, and I like the pick, they took Booker, the defensive end, the edge guy, with that trade that the Bills made. The Bills could have used Booker. I'm not criticizing the trade. I'm just saying that was another good move by the Bears.
Yeah, and really the other one I would highlight too, and I know you've got more than I do, and it pains me to say it, is I like what the Patriots did. Oh. You know, because there, I mean, listen, there was question for the Patriots of just like, okay, you know, should they draft a quarterback? Like, are they in a position? And again, you're talking about the third quarterback, and sometimes that's hard. Like, regardless of what we want to say, yeah, you need a quarterback, but it's just like, listen, I don't know, if I've got my heart set on Jaden Daniels and he's not there, I think there's a chance. And if you don't like Drake May or J.J. McCarthy or, you know, any of the other options that are there, it's like, do you take one just to take one? Like, that's probably what they ended up doing with Mac Jones, and we saw how that worked out. So, mm-hmm. listen, there's like the smoke beforehand and all this type of stuff. But they take Drake May, who you look at and say, okay, there's plenty to like there, right? And I think we know with this, too, with some quarterbacks, like, you've got to be surrounded in the right system. You've got to have the right people around you. You know, all of those things, like, I don't know, if, you know, Josh Allen went to the Jets and Sam Darnold went to the Bills, like, how different might have their careers been? I don't know. Like, you can look at all of those things. So I liked it with that. But then I liked, you know, So the question was, well, if you don't take a quarterback, do you get it like a Marvin Harrison Jr., right? And you get this elite wide receiver. You can punt on quarterback for a period. And I was like, no, not going to do that. But then what they did at wide receiver, I liked, where they got Jalen Polk from Washington, I think in the second round. They added Javon Baker, again, who we talked about earlier, who, you know, Baker seemed to be the sleeper pick at wide receiver for like every single draft expert out there.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even believe that the guy went in the fourth round, because the way everyone was talking about him was just like, oh, like if everyone's saying he's their sleeper, like, what's he going to end up going in, you know, end of the first round or something like that? So aside from that, you know, they ended up doing some things along the offensive line as well, which I thought was something good when you've got a rookie QB coming in. So as much as it pains me to say I like what the Patriots did, I liked what the Patriots did.
I will go further, and I will say that actually they had my favorite draft of any team. They really did. I like them taking Drake May, sticking to their guns, getting the quarterback. Look, their offense has been absolutely anemic since Tom Brady left. It's been terrible, right? And they go, they get their quarterback. I love Jalen Polk in the second round. And of all the picks in the draft, maybe Javon Baker went pick 110 in the fourth round to the Patriots. My biggest temper tantrum of the whole draft might have been that pick, because this is where, man, this is probably the one point of the draft where I said, what the hell are the Bills doing at this, with this position or this draft capital? Because they had the fourth and then they had 4 fifths. And I'm like, man, please get up early. And they also have plenty of stuff from that year, including the Diggs pick, if they wanted to deploy that. Get up. They were at 128 and New England took Baker at 110.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to get up ahead early in the round 4. Troy Franklin went off the board right away. Whatever. Yeah. I wanted Javon Baker. And when they did not trade up and Javon Baker went to the Patriots, it really pissed me off, man. It really, in the moment, pissed me off. So anyway, the Patriots get their quarterback. They get 2 good wide receivers with lots of potential. They took 2 interior offensive linemen in rounds 3 and 4. One of them should start. I just think it was a great way for the Patriots to just rebuild their offense. I'll fly through the couple that I have. It won't take too long here. I like the Colts draft a lot. They got the first defensive guy on the board, Leatu Latu, pick 15. Donnie Mitchell, who I'll tell you, honestly, once Brian Thomas Jr. went off the board, Leggett or Donnie Mitchell were the guy that I wanted. And yeah, he could be a bust. He could also be the next Eric Mulch. Just like Keon Coleman could be Mike Evans or Kelvin Benjamin. Who the hell knows? But I liked him. Anthony Gould in the 5th, a really fast receiver, good punt returner. Safety Jalen Simpson, I liked a lot too. They got him in the 5th. I like the Rams draft. Good defensive commitment. They got Jared Verse at 19. Braden Fisk at 39.
The Rams doing a lot on defense was surprising, right? Because everything leading up to it, you're just like, okay, no one knows what they're going to do. I think even Peter Schrager had said something, and everyone knows he and McVay are tight, right? That he's like, listen, I think you can bank on the Rams, you know, getting an offensive player. And all these mocks, you'd be like, hey, are they going to take Brian Thomas Jr.? Are they going to take an A.D. Mitchell? Are they going to take one of these wide receivers? And they did not. Like, it's so, I mean, the Rams are the one team that, like, nobody had any clue what they were going to do. There's no real draft history to look
at. Right, exactly.
To go again. So,
yeah, they went defense, man. And I'll tell you, I got to be honest with you. I like Cole Bishop. I see the fit. I think he could be a great Bill. But coming into this draft, my mock pick, the guy that I wanted was Cameron Kitchens from Miami. I still think he's going to be a great free safety. He is kind of like a ball hawk. He's a playmaker. Anyway, so they get him. So their defense looks really good. To get Blake Corum in round 3, a running back who's going to kind of fit in well with Kieran Williams. And then you said it pained you to pick the Patriots. Again, I'll go further. I'm also going to say the Miami Dolphins. I hate to say it, man, but they did well. They get Chop Robinson. They get Mohamed Kamara in the 5th round, who I thought was a steal at defensive end. So they got 2 edge guys. They go in round 2 and they get a starting offensive tackle, likely. And Patrick Paul. And then this is where, you know, Brandon Bean was talking about, John McDermott's talking about speed and explosion. Well, Miami, who's already, if nothing else, Miami's fast. They go get Jalen Wright, who is an absolute burner, to go with Devin Achane, who is an absolute burner. And then in the sixth round, Chris Trapasso had this guy in the second. Man, I had him like, I thought he'd go like maybe late third, early fourth at the most. Malik Washington, slot dude, speedster. Just, man, that team's got some crazy ass speed. It pisses me off, man, how fast that team is. Hate to say it, man, but that's tough to deal with when you got that much speed. So good draft for Miami. Got two more, too. Pittsburgh, offensive tackle in round one. They come back with Zach Frazier at pick 51. I thought that was a steal. Roman Wilson, a wide receiver a lot of people like. They got him in the third round. Peyton Wilson's a linebacker in round four. Really good linebacker, but he can't stay healthy. So I like the draft for Pittsburgh. And then the last team I got here is Philly. Just because, I mean, they made a shitload of trades, moved down, up and down the board, got a lot of stuff for next year. Dude, not once, but twice, a great player just fell to them. Quinyon Mitchell, the corner at pick 22, he's supposed to be the first DB off the board. I saw a mock draft him going 8 to Atlanta. He lasted 22. And then at pick 40, Cooper DeJean is still on the board and just falls to them. So they were pretty much gifted a brand new 50% of a secondary. Will Shipley's a good running back. Jeremiah Trotter, pretty good linebacker they got later on. The big dude from Florida State, Johnny Wilson, he took a flyer on him in the sixth. But anyway, just to have those two DBs just fall to them at 22 and 40, that was a big W for Philly.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, too, because you talk about guys like Malik Washington. You talk about Johnny Wilson, and it's like, oh, my gosh, these guys went in the sixth round. Like, again, like, I wish the Bills took a flyer on this one or that one. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is. But I do think back in so many ways, like, you know, we go through these mock drafts, the simulators, we do these things. And like a year later, like, I'm not remembering the guy that like, oh, was my favorite target for the Bills in the fifth round or this and that. Like, you know, if one of these guys pops, it becomes the like, oh, it, you know, it jumps out at you, but it'll be interesting this year. The point I'm trying to make with it, because for those wide receivers that fell, we talked about them so much. Mm-hmm. You know, wide receiver is different, right? Because you play fantasy football, you track these things, like not like some linebacker or offensive tackle or whatever type of piece. It'll be interesting in, you know, I'll say in like 2 or 3 years, what's happening here.
Yeah, this is going to be a year where there's going to be a lot of tracking with Keon Coleman and other receivers that the Bills pass on. I talked about this a little bit on yesterday's show. What I like most about the Bills taking Keon Coleman, and I hope I can make this make sense because I don't think I did a good job of this yesterday. I like the fact that there's not really any what ifs, because the Bills could have taken Xavier Worthy if they wanted him. They could have taken Xavier Leggett if they wanted him. They didn't. Yeah. And then they go into day two, and it's not like they had to sweat out a couple picks and maybe two receivers went, and then they took Keon Coleman. Like, say if Jalen Polk went out to start the round, or Troy Franklin, or whoever the hell, so I'm drawing a blank on some of the other receivers. But the Bills, if they wanted him, could have had him, because he was the first guy taken in night two and starting at pick 28, because Xavier Worthy, Ricky Pearsall, and Xavier Leggett all went. Again, the Bills had that pick. So if they wanted one of those guys, they could have taken him. So if Keon Coleman ends up becoming a great pro, all the credit to the Bills, because they picked the right guy. If he ends up busting, no one to blame but themselves, because they had their pick of all these, any of the non-top four receivers, and they chose Keon Coleman. So I like that we won't be talking about what ifs. Like with the running backs, if Travis Etienne had fallen to the Bills, if Najee Harris, would they have taken him? We'll never know. Well, we do know that the Bills like Keon Coleman because they took him as wide receiver 5. In their book anyway, wide receiver 5.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's going to be and to Keon Coleman, something I forgot to mention earlier. I don't know if you saw on social media over the weekend, at least for, you know, checking some of the boxes, saw that he did reach out to Andre Reed already.
Yeah.
Sometimes with that, and I know that, you know, some folks can kind of roll their eyes at that, like, hey, whatever, who cares? But, you know, sometimes when you talk about, again, just doing the right things, you're coming into a market, Hall of Fame wide receiver, Andre Reed, to reach out to him and just whatever it is, even if it's just shooting a text or whatever, hey, I want to pick your brain. We all know the game has changed over those years and that part is fine, but to show just that level of respect, I think that goes a long way sometimes when you talk about that character and creating a lineage. And hey, if you pick up one or two, you know, pieces of advice from any Hall of Famer, let alone Andre Reed, I think that's a good thing.
I'll tell you what, I mean, you hit the nail on the head earlier too. You were talking about losing veterans and the character and the cap, you know, a lot of captains that this team drafted. That wasn't lost on me. And I don't think that was by coincidence either. I mean, his team did lose a lot of veteran leadership. And I mean, this team went through some bullshit inside those walls. And if you don't think that's the biggest reason why Stephon Diggs got traded, I'm talking about everybody out there who's watching or listening. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you at this point. So it's not lost on me that they really were looking to get guys who are captains of their teams, you know, good leaders, have good attitudes, high character guys. I'm sure that they looked into when they were interviewing receivers and spending time with them. I guarantee you they were spending a nice chunk of it of what kind of relationship is this guy going to have with my franchise quarterback? I can guarantee you that that was a significant part of their evaluation on some of these players, which might have led them to Coleman. And we're seeing a little bit of it right away with, just like you said, this press conference, reaching out to Andre Reed. I kind of think you're seeing a little bit of his personality and character right off the bat. So I like that.
Can I ask you a question? I'm going off script here. Go ahead. What was your take on the word that Josh Allen had done about 200 to 250 mock drafts on his own to kind of see the stuff with the different receivers that could
be? Well, he's a goof, so it wouldn't surprise me. He's probably sitting there at Paris on his phone on the table with Haley Steinfeld going through some mock drafts. But look, man, once his receiver got traded, I believe that he has input. Like, I'm not quite sure. Did he just text the name Dalton Kincaid last year? Is that hyperbole? I don't know. Did he say that that's the guy that he wanted after night one? I'm sure he did. Is that the reason why they took him? Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, to answer your question, it wouldn't surprise me if he sat around doing these mock drafts. Who the hell knows? I don't know.
I think with some of it as well, like when you talk about a franchise quarterback, and this not just Josh Allen, I think for any, right? Like if you're doing your pre-draft work and you're talking about different options, like wouldn't you have your quarterback at least engaged in some of that conversation to talk about what it is that he might look for, kind of what he might identify? I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, he's not the one writing the name on the card and sending it to the podium or anything along those lines. But, you know, if you're Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, like, I would like to think that they would get your input. I think it would be
important to. Yeah, he's at that level where his input matters. He's not Daniel Jones, where it's like, look, dude, be happy you're a quarterback right now. You know what I mean? He's the guy. I got kind of two points that I want to make, kind of glass half empty, glass half full, and I want to get your reactions to both of them. Kind of that's how we'll wind down with this episode. I'm going to be honest with you, man. This first one is probably going to make me come off like a little bit like a hater, but I really make it a point on this podcast to try to be honest in my opinions and not necessarily just say what I think the fans are going to like the most. So I got to say this. If there was ever a case right now where we're not being weird, meaning the Bills, not being blatant about it, but likely taking a step back this year to be better for the second half of Josh Allen's prime, I feel like it's right now. And I really don't know at this point how anyone could arrive at a different conclusion, because look, they give up their malcontent wide receiver, their best wide receiver, but clearly an issue inside those walls. And it's not all just him, so I'm not saying that either, but there's an issue. They give up their malcontent wide receiver in a trade for an asset, a good one, but next year, an asset that they could have deployed to help them acquire a piece during this year's draft. Maybe that gets them Brian Thomas Jr. Maybe that gets them early in the round three to get a guy that they really liked. But not only do they hold on to that piece, but then they also trade another pick this year for a higher pick next year. I mean, who can even dispute that right now? You're looking at the guys they got rid of during the offseason. They trade their wide receiver on April 3rd, and they go into this draft and they have a lot of capital. They don't trade up. They keep all their picks. They actually trade down. They don't do anything with 2025 picks, which they have two twos. you wonder. It's like they want to be competitive. I'm certainly not saying they're not trying to win football games right now, but they're not doing everything that they can to be great this year because they're looking at it. You use the word reset. You're right, but I also have a hard time when you've got a quarterback who plays the way Josh Allen plays, balls to the wall, and he's in his seventh year, a prime year. I kind of have a problem when you're not doing everything you could possibly do every year to give them the best opportunity. Again, I think they're trying to win, Anthony, but I don't think that they're doing everything they can because I think they got their eyes on 2025 as much or maybe even more than they do this year. Is that a fair statement?
No, it's a fair statement. I mean, and listen, I can, you know, I can present the other side of it a little bit. But first, I'll start by saying, like, listen, from just a football standpoint and the team that's on the field, yeah, mm-hmm. you still wish that Stefon Diggs was there, like whether he's in decline or not, right? Just that ability of, if you're trotting out there with Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, and Stefon Diggs, like you're probably talking about being a favorite to win the Super Bowl next year as a fan, and that's fine. But he's not here. They had to make that separation, and the other separations that they made too, right? I mean, we're talking about all players that are in decline and different points of decline. Some maybe very close to retirement, others not there yet. But I don't think anyone would agree that Stefon Diggs is still on an upward trajectory for where he is in his career. Could still have some very productive seasons left. Don't get me wrong. Like, sure. I'm not a Stefon Diggs hater, but it's the back nine. Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morris, Tre'Davious White.
Absolutely.
Micah Hyde, Leonard Floyd. Gabe Davis, you could argue, okay, there's still a potential, right? I mean, he's 24 years old. But really everything that they've done, and it's like you're looking at guys that the trajectory, it's a new regime. And no one's going to look at it and say, oh, James Cook is horrible or Dalton Kincaid or Terrell Bernard or Christian Benford. So there's a lot of Osiris Torrance. Like, there's a lot of guys that are still, the trajectory is pointing up. Yeah. So, yeah, it does feel weird because the cap is what it is, and now Diggs is gone. So, it's going to be a little bit more of an underdog mentality. They're not going to be the most exciting storyline of the offseason. They're not going to get those national headlines like they have so much in the past. Maybe that's not a bad thing for this season. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, the roster is better than it was going into last year. I mean, there's still some time. Let's see if they make a move or two once that June 1st, $10 million cap space opens up from the Tre'Davious White move. But I also don't look at it and say, like, oh, this team is not going to be good. Like, I won't say
well. Agreed. I agree with that. This is the year where I think we really learned that the salary cap, unfortunately, is real. You know, and I say that in this way, like, let's pretend the salary cap wasn't an issue with the Bills right now. When I say they're not really doing everything they possibly can, like, Poyer, Hyde, skill-wise, I don't think their salary matched the value of where they're at in their careers. So you still might get rid of them anyway, even if you didn't have to because of money. Trey White, same deal. Who knows if he's ever going to be the same player now? Two crazy major injuries. Mitch Morris, kind of feel that was cap related, although they could have redid his contract and lowered his number for this year. So maybe it was about football too, but it's the, making a trade for a big receiver. I said this yesterday. I have to say this again, and it's not all doom and gloom, and I'm going to get there in a second too, but I'm being a hypocrite because I wanted Stefon Diggs to get traded at that point. I was fine with the trade, especially when they got an asset for next year. Cause I'm like, all right, well, this is a chess piece. Something else is coming besides drafting a receiver. We all knew they were going to draft a receiver, whether they kept Stefon Diggs or not. I felt like something was coming. And who knows, man, maybe something still is coming. It's only the end of April right now. But right now I feel like, had I known that all they were going to do is draft Keon Coleman and pretty much nothing else at that position, I would have been like, keep this dude for one more year. Even if he is on the back nine, just him being out there alone makes this team better. You know, it's more attention to him. So I kind of felt, and I said it yesterday, that I felt a little bit duped which is my own fault because now Brandon, we never said he, you know, he only said it's only April. He never said that the Ross, you know, that he's going out again in Brandon Ayuk or that he's going to trade up for Roma Dunes. He never said he was doing that. I just kind of felt like something was coming. You don't trade a guy, even if he is on his decline, you don't trade a guy who's that good if you don't have another part of the plan in your mind. And it just doesn't feel that way. So, you know, don't have the knowledge of how bad things got in that locker room. Like, was this going to be a big problem this year? Was he going to not show up to camp? Was he going to be very vocal about his displeasure with being in Buffalo? We don't know that. But it just feels to me like if this was going to be the plan, because they didn't even, you know, we're talking about the cap, man. They didn't save no damn money. They spent $3 million more to trade him for a pick next year that they did not use to help their team this year, which goes back to my original point. I feel like they didn't do enough to try to put the best product on the field for this year so far. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, listen, the draft is it's such a weird thing, right? And as Bills fans, we have had this the draft had always been like, oh, here's the great hope, right? You think through the drought, like you needed the draft. Free agents were not coming to Buffalo. So you needed to just like, we need to draft someone and they have no choice. This is where they're coming. And you know, praying that these are guys that would hit. Right. You talked yesterday about the, you know, writing about guys like Coe Simpson and Ashton Yabuti and all these that we thought were going to be like, these are going to be these steals. This is going to be what happened.
Sure.
So we've been trained to put so much stock into draft weekend that, you know what? Those are a good football team. You don't have to put that make or break. Like, hey, you can go through with stuff. And guess what? Kaiir Elam doesn't necessarily have to be exactly what you need him to be. And you're still winning the AFC East every year. Like, it's not sinking you in what you did. But if you miss on a pick like John McCargo or J.P. Lossman or whatever, Mike Williams in the past, like, that's the type of stuff that sets you back because you were not a good football team. But you
are now.
So it doesn't need to be, like, super exciting and feel like the savior is coming because you're a good football team. It's okay. It's going to feel like a letdown, though. And that's kind of a weird adjustment because I feel the same way too. It's just like, you know, it's like it's Christmas morning and you got socks.
I get it. And I,
you need socks.
They're like socks.
You know what I mean? Like it's not something, you know.
I get it. I promise you, I do. I get it. I also know that the mere mention of me saying Stephon Diggs should have stayed in Buffalo for 1 year, even if it's going to get taken out of context, and it's going to invite me getting racialed in my YouTube comments and stuff like that. I get it. I'm good with that. And then on the other side, as we wrap up here. Again, the glass is can be half full as well. It's not all doom and gloom, man. This team is still really good and capable. They still have an elite quarterback who's in his peak right now. They got a balanced offense. It's more predictable. We talked about it on the show yesterday, too. I mean, they did win down the stretch. I think them how they played down the stretch and winning those games kind of maybe said, you know what? We don't need to have a quote-unquote undisputed number one receiver. Let's just have a collection of guys who on any given week could be that number one guy. Kind of feels like that's the philosophy. Lots of good young talent. You hit on it. So many guys who are still like ascending with Cook and Kincaid and Shakir and, man, Greg Rizeau, Bernard, Benford. I keep going on. Lots of young talent. And I hit on this earlier. I think this is a big deal. It's not a big deal on other teams, but the way Sean McDermott is in love with playing 8-9 defensive linemen, I think the defensive tackle depth on this team is greatly improved from last year between Austin Johnson, Dwayne Williams, and now Dwayne Carter. Again, I did just think that was such a big problem last year. If you want to look at it from that aspect, there's still plenty to be excited about with the Bills. It's not a guarantee. You know, this team is, it's not like they have no chance to win the Super Bowl. I think the difference, Anthony, between now and the last 2-3 years is it felt like the Bills were the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Probably were the betting favorite. Right now, they're probably on paper, I would guess. I should have looked before I started talking to you about this. Probably like maybe the fifth best team in the AFC, maybe right now on paper. I mean, it can't win the AFC. You know what I'm saying?
It's the end of April. Like you're good. You know, when you talk about being the betting favorites and this and that, like there's a reason whenever you go to the casino, they're building a new hotel next door or a brand new wing or some 50-foot waterfall in the lobby because, you know, if the favorites always hit, then Vegas wouldn't be able to do that stuff, right? So it's like...
Exactly. Being a favorite for 3 years in a row didn't get them out of the divisional round of the playoffs. So maybe, you know, sleeping on them a little bit, maybe that might light a fire under their ass in a different type of way. Who the hell knows? But yeah, it's going to be... Let's just get through this season because that's how I kind of wanted to end it. I was thinking in my mind, I'm like, all right, so the draft's over, the meat and potatoes of free agency's over. You will see a little bit of action, by the way, not necessarily with Buffalo, but some of these names, there's a lot of names out there that have not been signed. The draft's over, comp pick formula's over. Maybe even by the time people are listening to this, there'll be some names going somewhere around the league. But I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, for the most part, this is all over the camp now. It's like you and I are going to have to find some creative ways to keep the content and the conversations flowing and interesting over this period of time.
Something tells me we'll figure it out, man.
All right, guys. And on that note, I want to thank Anthony Marino for joining me. You know what? I usually say I'm going to have this person tomorrow. I don't even know what the hell is going to be on the show tomorrow. But it will be something. So talk to you then.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.